there are skunks everywhere, and skunks are part of our life, and they are, there seems to be the last few years more skunks. Now, I don't know that for a fact, other than I'm hearing from people more and more with this issue. So I wanted to talk a little bit about this with someone that perhaps knew a heck of a lot more of it than me, and that's why Rebecca Fife is joining us this morning. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning, Lou. Thanks for inviting me.
You are a wildlife manager with ABC Human Wildlife Control and Prevention, a state-certified urban wildlife expert, and mushroom hunting hobbyist.
That's a fact.
You know, I used to hunt mushrooms with my father, so that is like, you just brought back a memory of us going into the woods and hunting for mushrooms.
That's cool. What kinds of mushrooms did you hunt for?
I have no idea. I was just a little kid, and all I was supposed to do was lift things.
Gotcha.
But I do remember that.
I follow the reports of when the morels come up. It starts in the southern part of the country, and then they end all the way up in Canada and Alaska. And this week, they should make their first appearances in Cook County. So mushroom hunters will be really excited to get out there to pick some.
Now, if I remember something about the morel, which is like a wonderful mushroom, but there's another mushroom that kind of looks like a morel, but it's not.
It's a false morel. It's called a gyromitra. It's important that people don't accidentally eat those.
Right. So you really kind of need to know your stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really great to go out with a group like the Illinois Mycological Association, which takes lay people out with professional mycologists so that they can learn to identify the species correctly.
Well, look at that. You're listening to Mushroom Talk on WGN Radio. Rebecca and Lou will be back in just a minute. No, the reason we have you on, Rebecca, is to talk about skunks.
Yeah.
Now, am I fair in my assumption that the skunk population over the past few years has gotten bigger?
I believe it has, and there's actually a correlation between skunks and morels, between skunks and mushrooms, and that is that they both love moisture. So skunks eat grubs in your lawn and other insects, and when the ground gets really hot and dry, it drives the grubs and the earthworms deeper, and it's harder for skunks to find the food that they need. But skunks live somewhat commensally with humans. That means they want to live near us, like rats are going to be commensal rodents and raccoons that feed out of our garbage cans, and we help them increase their populations by making that nice garbage food so abundant to them. Skunks are also beginning to live commensally, and the big favor that we're doing them is we're watering our lawns and our golf courses, and it's causing them to have a more consistent food supply of grubs and earthworms, so they're living closer to us. So not only is the population subtly increasing, which is kind of no big deal, but we're noticing them more because they want to forage in our nice, softened, watered lawns.
Okay, now take me through the typical day of a skunk, if you can. Now we don't see them during the day, correct?
That's right. Their life cycles are very seasonal. So a spring skunk has emerged from a winter den. They don't hibernate, but they hole up for the winter with up to 11 of their family members. And they get really skinny over the winter because it's hard to forage. So they've lost all that good fat that they put on last fall. So they come out in the spring, and they really need to forage to fatten up, and they need to mate as well. So skunks breed in February and March, and actually for the first time in my life, I got to witness it this March. What happened was I live on a pond inside the forest preserve in Wakanda, and I look out my window, and there's this skunk, and he's just thrashing and rolling around. He's this big, beautiful skunk, and I think, oh my gosh, he's rabid. What am I going to do? I have a rabid skunk in my yard. And after about 10 minutes of this, he gets off of a little female skunk. He wasn't rabid at all. And her hair was just a mess, and she stumbles away. And that was the first time I ever witnessed that. And he smoked a cigarette, and then he was gone. Yeah.
That's funny. He's really got to try and stop smoking. But, I mean, I suppose if you're happy. Okay, so we have a lot of them. It's very interesting that you make that correlation from the watering the lawn and the grubs and the, I guess it's, you know, it's kind of jump the other step. You know, I hear, I get questions all the time about people saying that, oh my gosh, the grubs are all over my lawn and, you know, it terrorized my lawn. And you're really more worried about the fact that your lawn looks terrible, but you've created this, essentially the old country buffet for the skunks as well.
Yes, and people create that situation, you know, with the grubs from watering their lawn abundantly. And we create a lot of problems with the way we manage our neighborhoods. For instance, I live on a pond, and my neighbors fertilize their lawns like crazy. And that fertilizer runs into the pond and causes an algae bloom that they then put poison in the pond to control the algae instead of, you know, putting minnows that could control it. And we used to be a dragonfly monitoring site when I moved in 2005. And since they started doing all of this algae control and all of this fertilizing and removing the algae and removing the snags of fallen wood that gave harborage to minnows and things, we hardly have any dragonflies left there. So the way that we manage our neighborhoods really isn't, you know, from a perspective of caring for the ecology.
All this is terrific information, and I think, it, you know, from an ecology standpoint, it all makes perfect sense. The reality of it all is the fact that, you know, we live in denser populations. We're living closer together. Obviously, all these animals were here first, but we're trying to coexist. And I don't, you know, let me ask you this. What is the purpose of a skunk's life? In other words, do they offer any ecological benefit to society? I mean, I'm sure they do, but in other words, we don't want to be grabbing these and eliminating these skunks. What can we do to perhaps limit their access to our yards?
That's my favorite question that anyone's ever asked me about skunks. So I'm going to tell you what their function is in nature and what we can do to keep them from, you know, damaging our property and spraying our pets and, you know, making us not have the quiet enjoyment of our properties. So your first question is, what's their function in the ecosystem? And one of their main functions is skunks are related to badgers, and they're the best diggers in our area. So the burrows that they excavate are later occupied by so many different types of wildlife. So skunks, with their outstanding digging, provide habitat to all kinds of other animals with their abandoned dens. So they're incredibly important in that way, as well as many, many other ways, like controlling insect and grub populations. Now, what you can do is, first of all, there is a population increase. Many biologists are saying that it's just, that we're noticing them more because they want to eat in our softened yard. But I think it's kind of half that and half that their numbers have increased. And the reason their numbers have increased is they're subject to diseases like rabies and distemper and leptospirosis, and they're just on a good swing, quite honestly. There hasn't been a skunk found in Illinois with rabies since 2005, whereas in the, you know, early 90s, there were like over 200 a year with rabies. So there's just a healthier population. And when distemper sweeps across the country, because it's very contagious, so when animals congregate, they pass it on to one another, you notice a lot of dead and dying skunks wandering out in the roadway, and we just frankly haven't seen that in about 6 years. But like all things in nature, it's a pendulum, and it's going to swing back the other way, and their heightened population numbers are going to self-correct. So there's nothing that we as wildlife managers need to do to manage the skunk population, but we do need to help you and your listeners, the homeowners, to live with them in a way that you can enjoy your own yard. So here's what you do. When you go home today, Lou, take a walk around your whole property and look at the perimeter of your house, your stoop, your deck. Clear out any harborage that's on your property, like wood piles and things like that. If you're not utilizing that wood in your fireplace and it's just sitting there for years, get it out of there. Or, you know, you can build a frame to put that firewood in that isn't going to be so messy and inviting to animals. And then as you do this perimeter walk, if there are any holes that you see, you're going to want to take dirt or crumpled newspaper or some cardboard and stuff it in those holes. And if you see that that's cleared out the next day, you're going to know that it's an active burrow and that you need to have a humane trapper come out and deal with it. There's also a process that we use that we can either do it for your listeners or we can instruct them absolutely free of charge how to do it themselves. And we call it a deck screen up or a foundation screening. And that's when we dig a shallow trench around the stoop or around the deck, and we bury hardware cloth a few inches deep and then about a foot out so nothing can dig underneath there. And it, you know, works for 15, 20 years to keep animals from burrowing underneath there, and then they'll have to go live a little further from your house, and your dog is less likely to get sprayed, and you're less likely to have an encounter.
Right. Who are their predators?
Because
who would want to go near them?
Cars are the number one predator, absolutely.
And then Steve, who hosts our news here on Saturdays, he wanted to know, can you give us an idea of how far they can spray?
I mean, yeah, I'm always afraid. I'm afraid of walking, surprising one in my shed and getting it.
Yeah, absolutely. So they can spray about 10 feet, and the substance that they spray is called butyl mercaptan. And when you hear the prefix butyl,
oh, that was a wasn't that a band that Steve Cochran was in?
I don't know. Right? That's not what I call it.
Wait, what is it called?
Butyl mercaptan, and the butyl part of it is the same molecule that comprises butyl rubber, and that's why people think that skunk spray smells a little bit like burning rubber.
Mm.
And they can spray about a tablespoon of it, and it's a yellow, thick, oily, volatile liquid. It's kind of like, you know, that fake movie theater butter, that sludge that people put on their popcorn. It's about like that in its texture. Yeah, it comes from two nipple-like glands under the tail, and they can actually aim them, and they aim for the eyes because it burns. It doesn't cause any permanent damage. It doesn't cause blindness. It can't actually hurt you. And even if a skunk had rabies, there's no rabies in the butyl mercaptan, so there's, you know, no danger in being sprayed by a skunk to you or your pet. But it does temporarily burn the eyes, and skunks know that, and that's why they aim for the eyes. And it can go about 10 feet.
Wow. That is so fascinating. All this is so fascinating. So, Rebecca, your organization, you actually have some benefits and some 24-hour hotlines that are available to people if they have questions about a lot of different things. Can you give information about that so we can share that with the listeners?
Absolutely. So we're ABC Humane Wildlife Control, and we're located in Arlington Heights, and we work with the partner nonprofit Wildlife Control Policy Institute, and we have a free wildlife hotline that people can call, and that number is area code 847-870-7175, again, 847-870-7175, and 24 hours a day, we have a state-certified biologist on call to answer any questions about nature and wildlife, and it's completely free of charge. And if someone calls and says, I'm a do-it-yourselfer, and you mentioned this, you know, deck screen-up thing, this foundation screen-up, and I don't want to pay someone to do that, I want to try it myself, we will give them photos of how to do it and very in-depth descriptions. If someone's dog gets sprayed by a skunk and they want, you know, a recipe to try to get it out, we'll give them that info as well. So they can also reach us on the web at www.abcwildlife.com. That's abcwildlife.com. And questions can be submitted that way. And you can send us photos of an insect that you found in your house and we'll identify it for you. Droppings, if birds are building nests above your lights and you want to know if it's a protected species or if you can just, you know, clear it out of there and prevent it from coming back, or if it's something, you know, that you'd have to wait until the chicks leave the nest because it's protected, they can send photos of that and we'll identify all of that and create a plan of action to help resolve these human-wildlife conflicts.
This is just terrific information. So if you're out and about today and you see some woman picking mushrooms, chances are it's Rebecca Fife, Urban Wildlife Manager with ABC Human Wildlife Control. Thank you so much for taking time this morning and giving us a little insight into those stinky little cute pets that are around there and all the other information as well. I hope you have a terrific weekend.
Thanks, Lou. You too.
Take care. It's 8:52 in the morning. You're listening to the Mr. Fix-It Show, or as I like to call it, Skunk Talk. We'll be back right after these messages.